Good morning, I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. The Astoria Public Library in the Astor Library Building is undergoing renovation thanks to citizens who voted for the bond, Astorians near and far, as well as from foundations and other sources. The library, functioning under the auspices of the City of Astoria, is expecting that the renovation will be complete in October of 2025. When the renovated library is complete, it will be renamed the Logan Memorial Library, the building actually, and Suzanne Harold, my guest, library director, will explain that to us later. It will be renamed the Logan Memorial Library after the Logan Family Trust, which donated significant funds to make the renovation possible. Today, we're going to learn more about the library's history, its present temporary location, and events which are still happening. And we'll also get a glimpse into the future of this community anchor. Libraries anchor our community. They engage minds and excite imagination. They are relevant and important. And today it is my pleasure to have Astoria Public Library Director Suzanne Harold with us. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning. Thank you for the chance to come on your show.
Well, of course, people are curious about what's happening. When you drive by, you see things happening, and so we're looking forward to hearing some updates. And before we talk about the library, its history, and where we're going with it, please tell the listening audience a bit about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, so Suzanne Harold was actually born here in Astoria. My family lived here in the mid-60s to the mid-70s. And then when I was two, we actually lived out in Napa when I was born. We moved down to Tillamook and I grew up there. But one fun fact, we bought our house on 8th and Harrison, and it's three blocks down from a house that my parents owned before I was born. So that's fun to just see that. There's stories of my brother lighting matches and dropping them on the porch roof at 5th and Harrison. So it was great to move here and get to see where all these stories, the house that all these stories originated from. After high school, I went to college in actually Grinnell, Iowa, moved back to Portland after that, and then decided, realized that I would enjoy lurking in a library. So I went to Syracuse University. It was the very early days of online distance learning. And got my Master of Library Science and worked at Multnomah County Library for about 10 years before we moved here to Astoria in 2013. So I figure I am both an NBA native born Astoria and an ABC Astorian by choice. So I tick both boxes.
I love that you said that. And you've been here now with the library as the library director for a couple of years, but before that, you also were involved with the library.
Yes. So I did some consulting work when I first moved here. And then in 2017, when Patty Skinner retired as the Youth Services Children's Librarian, I took over her position and did that role until 2022 when the then director retired. And I stepped in as interim director and then formal or permanent director.
Well, you are the library director at a very exciting time because for years, for decades probably, people have been, how do we update the library? What do we do with this mid-century brutalist architecture? What's happening? So why don't you anchor us a little bit in the history of the library?
Sure. Yeah, so one fun fact about the library is it actually dates back to 1892. It's been here in Astoria for a very long time. It's been in multiple locations, a couple of different places downtown. Later, it moved to what's now the Heritage Museum, and that's where it was during the fire. So it managed to escape the fire. From there, it moved, I believe, to the Elks Building, and then across the street to the Senior Center. And that's where it moved from the Senior Center to its current location in 1967. The building itself was designed by Ebba Wicks Brown. She graduated Astoria High School in the 40s, was one of the first licensed women architects in Oregon, and had a really strong vision for Astoria to kind of take, you know, because of the fire, so much of our architecture is from 1924. So it's very much one style and one period, which is what makes us so charming. But Ebba Brown also had a vision of bringing us more modern. And she was, she studied under a lot of other famous architects that did like the mid-century modern and the brutalist and international style. So she designed the U.S. Bank Building, the Library Building, the Illihee, the Maritime Museum, believe Towler, no, not Towler, but there's, the college library. She has a number of buildings around town that she's designed. And then, as you mentioned, when I moved back here in 2013, we had just wrapped up the needs assessment for a library. Like, what does the community want from a library? What do we want it to become? There was agreement that we wanted more natural light, more community meeting space. We wanted it to be accessible to everyone in the community. Until the renovation, there were stairs to get to the adult fiction collection. The aisles for the information books were too narrow for wheelchairs to get through easily. So figuring out a way to make it fully accessible. Lots of the systems were failing, the roof leaks, the heating, a little sketchy, no air conditioning, that kind of thing. So we went out to the community, did a bunch of talks. There was talk about moving it and building something at Heritage Square. There was talk about expanding into the Merwin building. Lots of debates back and forth, and finally settled on staying in this place, but renovating it. The design that everyone agreed to is done by Henenberry Eddy Architects in Portland. They specialize in libraries. They also specialize in mid-century modern buildings. They love that style. And so they brought a really a great balance of respecting and honoring the style while also making the building relevant and usable and adding light. So we're replacing multiple of the big concrete precast panels will become floor to ceiling windows to let in north facing light and west facing light. They've actually already cut the hole in the main floor where the reading room is. There will become a grand staircase down to the basement. So it'll open up the basement. There'll also be an elevator for people who prefer elevators or aren't able to do stairs. And there'll be meeting rooms everywhere. So it'll become, I think I've gotten off track a little bit from where I was supposed to be going, but it's gonna bring it into what we need as we go, as we're now into the 21st century.
Yes, and I think as we talked about before, the most important thing is in the design concept is to interpret the sense of place to really let people know that when you are in the library, it's Astoria's library, you're not Astoria, Oregon's library. And you said that they did that through a couple of things, the red thread and natural element.
Yes. So the design concept for the library is a Nordic tradition called the red thread. And it's defined as the thread that connects otherwise seemingly unrelated items. So what is that core thing that connects us all? So they're looking at our native heritage, Nordic, Chinese heritage, all of those things. What are elements that are relevant to everyone? And we settled on, there's some shapes that are common, especially the circle to all of those cultures, the wood and water. And so there'll be themes of boats and water and wood in the building. When you walk in, there'll be, I don't know if it will be cedar or cedar-like wall behind the circulation desk. The divider between where you enter and the children's area will be made out of rope and buoys. There'll be some other elements. The carpet will transition from blues to greens. There'll be pops of orange and yellow and red, like a sunset, and bright green. So yeah, it'll feel very Astoria. We've been partnering with the Chinook Indian Nation to help name some of the rooms and bring in elements of their culture and heritage into the library to really center us. Where the library is located is their traditional fishing grounds. It's where the river used to come in. If you look at old pictures of the river, it kind of had a big bump in the middle of it, almost like a big belly. And we're right on the edge of that bump.
Oh, that's great. And I know that, although we'll talk a little bit more about the funding, but I know that the obviously the renovation's ongoing, you've raised all that, but you could still use more donations because this idea that that you want to have exhibits such as the Chinook Indian Nation, crafts, mm-hmm. But the native artists need to be compensated. So that would offer a really powerful sense of place. And that's something that people can still donate to try to make happen, because while you have the funds for the renovation, these are kinds of the extra things that would really make it special.
Absolutely. Yes. Being able to to pay them for their work and their time and their expertise. There's also, we will be adding what's called a library of things to the library when we reopen. And so extra funds would help us purchase anything from puzzles, games, hotspots that people could check out. Possibly some libraries do instant pots or cake pans, really, or tools, those types of things that you need every so often, but don't necessarily want to purchase or can't afford to purchase or don't have room to keep in your house. So we'll be adding to that. Right now we have a small collection of like cultural passes to museums and state parks and national parks that you can check out from the library, but we're going to expand that. So also donations would help with that. And we'll be doing what's called an opening day collection so that when you, we've cut back a lot on what we're spending for books right now while we're in our temporary space. And then we will be purchasing a large number of books so that when we reopen, we have a fresh and vibrant collection. So, yeah.
Well, libraries have really had to change with the times. I mean, they really have. And there's a lot of flow there. So how are some of the ways that you see libraries changing?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that libraries have always changed and gone with the flow. We've always been on the edge since the Library of Alexandria a couple thousand years ago. So it's not new to us. We were one of the first adopters of computers when those became a thing. And when personal computers and internet access became important for people to thrive and function, libraries added those and looked for all the ways that they could remove barriers so that people can access what they need. So where libraries right now are really focused, I would say the COVID pandemic made gave everyone a chance to pull back and reflect, and libraries are very much focused on like what their own community needs. And in our community, what we heard is that people are looking for a space that they can gather, whether it is to meet for a book group or a small group of friends, or if it is so they can do a job interview online or a doctor's appointment online where they've got reliable internet access. Having that community space is critical. It's sometimes referred to as a third space. So it's a space that's not your home and that it's not your work. It's a third space where you can go and see other people. A library isn't a space where you have to rent your time the way that you do at a coffee shop or a restaurant where you need to be able to spend money in order to be there for an extended amount of time. And then it also gives access to both information that you need, but also just fun things that you want. And especially critical for children, we know that children who grow up in a print-rich environment and are read to and hear stories and are talked with, they come into school ready to learn. They've got all the foundations that they need for their brain to start being successful at school. And very few people can afford the number of picture books that a child really should grow up with, the thousand or so books that they should be exposed to before they enter kindergarten. So we're a perfect space for that. You can come in and check out a stack of books and bring them back a week or two later and check out another stack and do that for the entire, actually for your entire life from cradle to grave.
And there are ongoing events for preschoolers, baby, preteen events are still happening. And on your website, there's a calendar. There's also a live camera feed on your website. There are updates on Facebook and Instagram. So, you know, a lot of people maybe haven't been to your temporary location, but you're still functioning and there's still things people can access. You have resources available to the community.
Yes. So we are located right now in on 15th and Duane Street. We're kitty corner from the Blue Scorcher Bakery and the and Fort George. So it is the Robies Furniture Building, but it is the back corner. You are allowed to park in the Robies Furniture, like where we used to park for the furniture, but you will need to walk up and around. So it's not right there. We do have two 15-minute parking spots in front. So if you just need to drop off books or pick up holds, you can. We unfortunately do not have a drop box at this location, and I acknowledge that's a hassle. You are able to return your books at the Warrenton Library or the Seaside Library. They have drop boxes, or just let us know when you return them that, you know, it was an issue and we're not going to charge for late fees right now because it is so much harder to get items returned. And then, yeah, like you said, we've partnered with some other organizations to continue to offer limited programs. Every Thursday at 3 p.m. We have the Teen Manga Club, and that's for middle schoolers and high schoolers, and they're meeting at the dock, which is across from City Hall behind all of the food carts. It's an extension of the harbor, and it's their teen space. So they have opened that up to us and our teens. It's been a great partnership. And then on Wednesday mornings at 10, we have a preschool story time at Lucy's Books. And Friday mornings at 9:30, we have a program for babies and toddlers, also at Lucy's Books. That one's always near to my heart. It's a great way for parents to meet other parents and caregivers, for the babies to see each other and socialize time. We do a little bit. There's usually like one board book, but mostly it's songs and it's rhymes, and it's some toy and play time and interaction time, and just building all of those skills that are going to get them set up. And it's also critical to parents to just have that connection with other adults and be able to, we've seen some really like lifelong friendships and partnerships grow out of that program.
The library, yes, the jewel, the anchor of the community, for sure. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and today my guest is Astoria Public Library Director Suzanne Harold. We've been talking about the ongoing renovation, which you can go to the Astoria Public Library website and look at. It has a live camera feed. Thanks to the citizens who voted for the bond and for donations from Astorians and foundations. The library is now being renovated, and when it is completed, it will be renamed the Logan Memorial Library after the Logan Family Trust. Tell us about that piece of information. Who is the Logan family and why is this happening?
Sure. Yeah. So back, I think this was the early 70s, Lawrence F. Logan left in his will money in a trust to a number of different agencies and places, and he included a substantial gift to the city of Astoria for the construction of a new library. And then in 1998, I think it was, it was the last beneficiary of the trust passed away, and all of the money was divided out and given up. And at that point, the city received $620,000 from the trust that they converted into cash and put away for a new library. A bit later, we went to the attorneys and said, okay, if we're not going to build a new library, would a substantial renovation also meet the intent of the trust? And the judge agreed that it did. So that released the money. At this point, it's just under $1 million coming from the Logan family. And one of the stipulations of it is that the library be renamed, the building be renamed to the Logan Memorial Library when it is, when it reopens. So Lawrence Logan is the grandson of Dr. W.C. Logan. He and his wife, Audley, lived here in Astoria early in the 20th century. Sounds like they were quite the forces to be reckoned with. Audley was a debutante from San Francisco who moved up here with her husband and was known as one of Astoria's dowager mothers. W.C. Logan was one of the first licensed dentists in Oregon, served on council, police commission, a number of other positions within the city, and then was mayor from 1939 to 1942. And one fun fact about when he was here, that was during the time when Astoria's bookmobile, the first bookmobile started, was while he was mayor. And it's the same bookmobile that Vampira worked at when she was here in Astoria. So a little fun trivia fact about that.
Well, there is an Astoria connection then, because the former mayor, his family, that legacy. So it will still be known as the Astoria Public Library, but the building then will change from Astor Library Building to the Logan Memorial Library Building.
Correct.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. You know, we didn't talk about the Astoria Library Friends Association, which is something some folks listening to this program might want to be involved with. Let's talk a little bit about them.
Absolutely. So affectionately referred to as ALFA, the Astor Library Friends Association, and ALFA raises money and donates its time to supplement the budget that we get from the city. So a lot of the fun extras come from ALFA. So in the past, they have supported performers who come for summer reading programs. So the jugglers or the puppet shows will get funded by them. They, when we started a collection of picture books that have an MP3 player built into them, so you can listen to the story with headphones and it's all in one piece. You don't need a CD player or a record player or a tape player, depending on how old you are, if you remember the book audio sets. So they gave the money to get that collection started. And then there's a board that meets semi-regularly. They're the ones who coordinated the big book sale when we moved out of the library building into our temporary location. So yeah, you can stop by the library or go on our website. I'm still getting all of the information about them up on the website, but hopefully soon there'll be a little bit more and contact information there. We were the victims of cyber activity, the city was, about a month ago, and our websites are back up, but there's still some glitches. There's still some broken links and some outdated information. So I do encourage you, if you see something that doesn't seem right, give us a call and double check it, or shoot me an email. My email's on the front page of the library website. Let me know about it, and then I can get it fixed. I'm fixing things as I come across them.
Oh, excellent. Let's talk a little bit about the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Yes. So this is an exciting, the Library Foundation, which was working to raise money for the renovation prior to the pandemic, with the help of Ruth Metz, who's a library consultant that I've worked with also in the past, they applied for a challenge grant from the National Endowment for Humanities, and it's a matching grant where you raise 3-1. So they offered us $500,000 with the caveat that we raise $1.5 million. The bond measure qualified as our matching funds. And then we had to do some other, I don't want to call it red tape, but there were qualifications that we had to meet in order to release the funds. And that money will be used for a humanities center. It'll be the basement level of the library, and that's what will be the new flag room or the large community space. John Gutenberger, our city historian, will have a large archive room down in the basement for artifacts and history of the library, books for and about Astorians. We'll have two display areas where we can put things from the archives and other community spaces. It'll be, like I mentioned, that community gathering space to learn and encourage arts. There'll be a rotating gallery space down in the basement where we can have temporary art exhibits.
I always, when I go to a city, I there are two things that are important to me. One is, can I go to the library and see the community bulletin board and see like what events are happening? Oh, there's a concert tonight at this little place or whatever. And also if you can go to a place where you can look out over the community, which we certainly have in Astoria with the column, mm-hmm. but, and you get a sense of place, like where am I in space and time? And so then you can do that with a big view. However, it's the library that I think, okay, they're going to have any local information, local things that I'm going to want to know about. And that's going to be important for you all too.
Yes. And we will have a dedicated space, community resource area with flyers and pamphlets and information of what's happening around town. And then we're going to get one of those boards, like the big TV screens that advertise what we're doing within the library that you can see as you're waiting for the elevator or waiting in line to check out materials.
That's very exciting. I mean, and here you are at the helm when this is all happening.
Yes. Yeah. It's an incredible honor to get to help steer the library at this time.
Well, we're very fortunate to have you with your marvelous background. The fact that you were actually born in Astoria too. There's always an Astoria connection with so many people. It's interesting. Astoria just is so unique. It's a unicorn. Anyway, we just have another couple minutes left. Any last things you'd like the listening audience to know, please, Suzanne?
Sure. Well, I know talking about Astoria's uniqueness, we have a lot of professional artists here in Astoria. So just a quick note that next month, we will be publishing a request for qualifications for any artists who would be interested in painting the murals that will be in the library or carving the cedar wall area. So more information about that to come. But if you are an artist or know of one, maybe tap them, any muralists, and let them know that's that's something that's coming up. And then we will, of course, advertise it on the website and through various channels to get the word out.
Oh, that's excellent. And then, of course, people can join ALFA, Astoria Library Friends Association. They can donate, again, for some of these exhibits and things that aren't covered by the things they can, by the funding that you have so far. They can engage by watching the live camera feed and stopping in and talking with you.
Yes, absolutely. Come by and see us. It's a little bit chilly right now until it warms back up, but just bundle up and come visit us in the new spot, and we'd love to see you.
Well, what you all do is open minds and you open opportunities. And especially, I'm so grateful the children's programs are still continuing because that's just vital.
Me too. Yes. 1 year is a really long amount of time if you are a baby or a preschooler or even a teen. We don't want to lose those connections.
Exactly. So let's give people a way that they can go to your website.
Yeah. So it's astorialibrary.org. And that will take you straight to the website. Click on Building Project in order to connect to the live cam or see every week I post a quick update of what happened that week and some photos from the construction. I'll be posting a link to this podcast. There's links to the plans and architect renderings there. So that's where you can, like you said, the calendar with all of our information, the catalog to see what books and ebooks and databases we have. Check out online services, local history, and you can rabbit hole deep dive into great newspaper clippings and online archives and family genealogy.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Suzanne. I appreciate you making time to do this program today.
Thank you so
grateful.
Much, Donna.
Yeah, the library is a treasure. So thank you. My appreciation to Viri. Thank you for doing all of the magical technology to make this happen, Viri. And thanks to Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. He's a talented banjo instructor, and we're grateful to have him in the community. And now, before we end the program, let's all just stop for a second and take a very deep, healing breath. In this overwhelming time in our world, it is important for us to deeply breathe and then to take good care of ourselves, focus on the things that are going well in our lives, and be compassionate and loving with ourselves and with others. Give yourself a hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, for being here now in this moment, the only moment that exists, the now moment, right now. Life is happening right now on the amazing planet we call Earth.